and welcome to The Glider Show, the audio podcast about learning to fly gliders. I'm your host, Sam, and I'm learning to glide in Devon, a county in the southwest of the United Kingdom. This is a part of the world that's drenched by the tail end of the Gulf Stream, so it's a rich green landscape of fields, farms, and the moon-like terrain of Dartmoor just off to our east. It's separated from Cornwall in the west by the River Tamar, a natural boundary chosen by King Æthelstan in the year 936. It's also the home of cream teas, small fat whale ponies, and of course Plymouth, the historic and important seaport from which the 100-foot-long Mayflower sailed in 1620 with 106 religious separatists aboard. Anyway, if you're wondering why I've suddenly gone all travelogy, it's because this week your emails and tweets have reminded me that The Glider Show already has listeners all over the world, and I thought that I'd share a bit about my patch, the place I call home. I've been learning to glide since October of last year, and averaging one flying day every 2 weeks. Now that's not a lot, but as I work away from home during the week, it's all about balancing time with my family with time away at the gliding club. As always, you're invited to follow my progress week by week as I make the transition from sky-wanging hustler to chilled-out slow coach. This week's show will make sense of what I mean by that. In this show, I'll be getting in some unexpected flying, learning how to spot thermals, and most important of all, learning how to slow down in the air. I'll also be digging into our post bag. Now, there's a lovely old-fashioned radio expression, if I ever heard one, to hear from listeners on two continents. First of all, in the news this week. In the last show, I talked about Mario Hitton's plans to reinvent gliding along the same sort of lines as Formula One. I left a comment on his YouTube video wondering if we really would like gliding to become like Formula One. Not long after that, these other comments appeared, posted by someone by the name of Silver Eagle First. He says, "I'd really hate it if gliding would become like F1. I would burn my glider pilot license. Umbrella bitches, arrogant millionaire pilots, stupid journalists, and sponsors of exploitative multinationals painted on gliders. No way." And he goes on, "And TV is for ignorant people who have nothing better to do in their life. When they watch an F1 race or a football match, they dream about something that they will never be, rich and famous. The sport itself is ruined and corrupted. We, glider pilots, fly because we love it, not because we want to be better than another or rich and famous." So a very impassioned argument there from Silver Eagle First, followed up by a gem of a comment by SFX1704, who says, "Possibly Silver Eagle First haven't contact with all other people, and some troubles in self-realization. I hope that all be good." Also in the news, I've been reading the recent BGA report on safety, focusing particularly on winch accidents, of which there are still too many wing drop accidents. And interestingly, the report shows that most of those happen to experienced pilots. For newcomers to gliding, the BGA safety reports are a must read, and particularly if, like me, you're reliant on winch launching. So I really do recommend you read that. I'll put a link to the PDF in the show notes. Wonder why it's happening to experienced pilots. What do you think it is that stops people releasing? Is it the innate belief we have that we can correct it? Maybe it's the reluctance to admit defeat. Also, I was thinking, what about a device to release the cable automatically if the wing touches down? Is that feasible, do you think? Or is it even desirable? I'd be interested to know what you think. And last in the news this week, a friend of mine at work in London has revealed that he has a large radio control glider in his garage that he rescued from the top of a very tall tree, and it's looking like he might be willing to pass it on to me. Now, I'll let you know if it happens. I'll need some help because I know absolutely nothing about radio control gliders. At the gliding club this week. If you'd happened to read my blog post on Saturday, you would have noticed that I was talking myself out of going gliding on Sunday. The weather on Saturday was pretty dismal. We were lashed with hailstones, followed by rain, and it was looking like Sunday was going to be another sodden, boggy affair. On top of that, I somehow failed to set my alarm for the right time and woke up at 8:30 when ordinarily I should have been up the glider club helping people to set up. Looked out the window, saw grey clouds and spots of rain, and I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to go. And I didn't, till about midday. Then the weather picked up, and I thought, you know what, if I don't go, I'm not going to have anything to put in this week's podcast. Well, this is unusual for me. It's Sunday, around about 12:30, midday. And the reason it's unusual, for a couple of reasons. One is that the sun is actually out, and I can hear birds singing, so it's a bit like spring. And of course, another reason it's unusual is that it's the first time in a very long time that I've come up to the gliding field this late in the day. So, not hopeful of flying particularly, but that's cool. I think I'm just going to go and help out and see what happens. Launch to winch, take up slack K13 on the north cable. All out, all out, all out. There she goes. So it's turned out to be a very, very bright day, quite warm, which is unusual for Dartmoor, or certainly in my experience of this last winter we've just had. Most of the flights today have been about 4 minutes. Roger's just come back from a flight of 7 whole minutes, so the thermal activity is improving a little bit. I've also just been introduced to and held for the first time a GoPro Hero 3 camera and suction mount. One of the guys here, Richard, has bought one recently, and they are fabulous little units. I think it's convinced me that although I like the Drift, I think I would probably choose the GoPro Hero 3 myself for the better, slightly better picture quality. And that really, the decision for that would be only because for the kinds of flying video that I'm looking to make, I have a good quality audio capture already in place in the cockpit with me, and I can dub that onto the video. But that's what swings it for me. But anyway, day's lovely and warm. I'm going to go out and see what the likelihood of flying again is. Did you have that glider plumbing in handy?
Or I didn't need it, actually.
You had to run for the bushes when you got back.
Yeah, a bit like that. It was a lot better than I imagined it ever would be. I've been worrying about it for a long time.
What did you go up in?
Astia.
Astia, okay.
Yeah, good fun.
5 hours, just what, around here, close by?
Yeah, very much. Just up and down there, basically. Down to Tavistock and back.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it all comes, lose at weight. Just a lot of waiting to do.
Yeah, that's at the top. It's kind of just starting to go around. They're very weak because there's just not a lot of heat. Very weak. On a good day, if you look and you can stand there, you'll just see them. Just see the edge of it just going round,
upwards, around.
So the lift is a funnel.
Yeah.
So as it goes up, it's doing that.
Yeah.
And it's also going round like that.
Okay.
So actually, you'll see the edge of the cloud, and once you get it, you'll kind of really go, I get that. And that's why when you're flying, a lot of people are kind of flying, looking at the Vario. Oh, you know, think, no, bloody look at the sky. The sky will tell you, actually, this cloud, I'm, you know, and it's going around like a train, you know. And another good reason to not keep your head in the cockpit.
The other problem I find is when I'm up there, they don't look like this. It doesn't look anything like this down here, does it?
That's right. And the other thing you've got is, you know, actually, let's notice what's on the ground. So there's a big cloud field down here. Big cloud field down here. The wind, I know, is coming from that direction, because that's what I was going to say. So actually, the thermal should be roughly where Colin is, you know, should be. So it might be a blue thermal, so I've got no marking of the actual cloud, but that's probably where the lift is. Or there's a big piece of concrete. So over here, we've got the scrapyard is quite good, isn't it, in the right wind condition. So, you know, where will the thermal be? Well, it'll probably be on the downwind side of the clump of
35 to 45 degrees, depending on wind strength, you know, upwind that you're looking for.
Right.
And always look for that kind
Sorry, don't worry, Colin. Here's one, look. So this one here, do you see how the mass is just moving out just around? Do you see how it's just...
I see it turning. Is that
There you go.
You need some of these, sir.
Yeah, ray bands with...
Well, no, just polarised, really.
Okay.
But they're very weak, so they're not. It's not as dramatic as on a real booming day where you can just watch the edge of the cloud just going around.
So it's round in the horizontal plane.
Yeah, right, yeah, like that.
Not round in the vertical.
No, round like that.
I didn't know that before.
Well, that's why if you're flying, you know, say, you know, a lot of people will fix on the Vario, actually. A lot of it's feeling the seat of your pants and actually look up and look around. Or even when you're off the launch, actually, which part of this cloud is going to work? Well, it'll be the sunny side. It's probably not going to be the flipping dark side. Yeah, it's a number of people who think, oh, I'll go to the dark side. That's bound to be working. No, actually, look, where's the sun going down, you know? So you see this big clump of grey?
Yeah, big grey
cloud. Right, so now look at that, those clouds down there.
Little clumps, yeah.
They've all got little wispy ends, and they're all trying to, they're just trying to work.
He's speaking a foreign language, they're trying to work.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find out what am I seeing?
Okay, so there's one. Yeah. Okay, so right, so this big clump of thing, right. Down below you've got
right.
Look at the very top of that one.
Yeah.
Right at the top, there's a little bit of cloud forming.
Yeah.
And it's just starting to try and go to the left.
It's pulling away. Yeah.
Now, if you watch that, you know, the trouble is what's happening is because you've got this lower cloud cover, the heat's not getting through to the ground. Yeah, it's weak. So they're not stonking.
I can tell what you said before. It's like something you get and you get it, but until you get it, it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to be.
No.
But so many people will take off, and they'll take off and write, you know, think about controls. Eventuality, I've got that, okay. And what they won't do is go, okay, when I go off the top of the launch, where am I headed?
Yeah.
Where am I headed? Actually, I need to think about this. I need to think about the fact that I've done it. Okay, right, because, you know, on an Irish launch, what have you got, 2 or 3 minutes before?
Yeah, that's it, good.
And actually, you'd already be up there sitting, and actually, there's a glider over there, he's circling.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, I might go and join him, actually. Can I get, you know, and people don't do the plan.
Yeah,
we talk about eventualities, you know.
Nearest I've got is, oh, look, there's a big cloud with a grey base.
Yeah.
That's got to be something happening there.
Yeah, well, which it could well be. But what's got is you can feel it's still cold in the air.
Yeah.
So we haven't got lots of heat. So they're pretty weak in terms of forming. I walk around the town, I'll do this.
Yeah. I caught myself doing that.
Well, there was something going up very quick, because all I did was found the bit that was coming down.
So that's the other thing. Is it always...
Well, if you got...
So I got six down over there.
Yeah, I had about six or seven now. I'm very good at finding...
This one. So come up straight above the eight, and you see there's one, and it's got a kind of hook.
Yeah.
All right, so if we watch that, if it is really a proper thermal, you'll find that little piece of blue in the middle will close up. It'll just go in on itself.
Right.
You reckon?
Yes.
What I'm seeing is it looks to me like there's, it's lower or closer, because it looks like relation to the cloud behind it.
That's building. Yeah. That's building. That is definitely.
See the little bit of blue in the middle. It's like you see, it's gradually filling in all the time. So basically, the cloud is just rolling around on itself and wrapping in.
If you can find them building, rather than decaying, generally you're onto. Well, you stand more of a.
My third flight of the day on Sunday was with Dartmoor Gliding Society Chairman Martin Cropper, and it was our first flight together that day. So Martin asked me where I was in my progress, and I told him that a couple of weeks ago I had done an unprompted flight. So we jumped into the K-13. Martin got me to take off, fly a circuit, and come back down and land.
And Martin didn't say anything throughout the flight. And I thought I did so-so, reasonably okay. I was a little bit nervous. So we landed, and because I was recording, Martin kept his debrief fairly neutral. And then once we got the glider back to the launch point, Martin took me off to one side, very tactfully away from the audio recorder, and gave me some feedback, which I think he thought was probably very hard for me. And actually, I really, really welcomed. What he pointed out to me was my whole flight was hurried. I remember after releasing, flying straight ahead in line with the runway, thinking, when do I turn? Where am I going? I had this impatience to just complete the circuit and land. And as a result, I really wasn't thinking about my speed. I trimmed the aircraft for 45 knots, but I when I turned, I let the speed build up, and then I basically flew around everywhere between 55 and 65 knots at certain points. It was really, really fast. So we decided that the next flight, we were going to concentrate on speed.
Okay, cable on, please. So the theme for this one is speed.
No need to signal. Ease the pressure. Well, that's a bit too much easing. Okay, normal gliding attitude, please. Trim? Right. So when we're turning, we should see no more ground in view than we can see at the moment. So look out to the left, look out to the right, back over the nose and turn to the right. That's good. Yeah, just a little bit to the right. Just in the valley there, wasn't it? Easing back with the stick a little. That's it.
Slow motion.
And see, the Vario is... There it is. Look at that. Right wing down, please. That's it. Don't get rudder. Gently, Sam. Gently. That's it.
Up on the horizon.
It's very narrow, isn't it? Keep it coming round. I think you'll just pick up a little bit now. And let the speed increase. There it is. Well done, sir. Keep eyes over the nose, don't let the speed increase. Okay. It's 50 knots. Back with the speed, Sam. Now this time, as we come round onto our downwind, we'll roll wings level, so you've got plenty of time for your approach. Look at that. So 45 knots there. We're in heavy sink. Now ease the stick forward. Wait till you've got 55. Move the trim lever forwards. Take your hand off the stick. No, you need the trim back a little. Okay, so now we're on our diagonal leg. We can afford to extend that a little now, can't we? Looking at the angle.
Yeah,
500 feet.
500.
Okay. We've got air brakes, so we can use them. So let's roll onto the base leg. Now we should have more ground in view because it's 55 knots that we're looking for, not 50. That's good. Looking up and down the runway. So let's go for our final turn. Don't let the speed increase. Notice how the noise is increasing, and that's increasing your workload. Wings level, don't reach for the air brake yet. Let's get back to 55, please. 55. Now choose a reference point. Let's say that puddle on the left, something like that. Do you need the air brakes? Yes, you do. Go for a good two-thirds air brakes. Monitor speed, reference point. Speed, reference point. Speed, the speed, reference point. Speed, reference point. As we get closer to the ground, look up, look up. Gently, gently. Fantastic.
Sort of. Oh, well.
Much better.
That was much more pleasant. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's what it should be, Sam. It should be pleasant. It shouldn't be stressful.
I learned to breathe in that last section.
Yeah. Just set it up 55 knots, yeah, whatever the speed is, and say, right, now, do I need the air brakes? Oh, yes, I do.
That's really good. Thank you. Focusing on speed is the most important thing. I've just been kind of...
Wanging around the sky.
Around and hoping to get down. Yeah.
Yeah, no. You see, we wouldn't have got those three turns in that previous circuit, would we? Because... we're just flying ourselves out of the sky.
No, there's a good order of things. I really appreciate that.
That's all right.
As you heard in the audio there, it was a fantastic experience to start off by thinking slow, by chanting to myself, easy, relaxed, gentle, nice and slow, round the circuit, 45 knots, no more, back to 45 knots, raise the nose, back to 45 knots. And... it was quite a revelation for me, actually, because what it did is it slowed it down enough to make sense of a number of the stages of the circuit and landing, which previously had just all seemed to happen in a blur because I was literally flying too fast everywhere. And this time, as you heard, it was a much more relaxed affair, and I really got to make sense of the different parts of the whole process. Particularly for the first time, coming in to land, setting my speed, picking a reference point consciously, and then just asking that question, is the reference point going up or down in my field of vision, and then adjusting the air brakes. And for the first time, because I was going slower, I felt that I was actually using the air brakes with some intelligence and some control. So a brilliant piece of feedback, and it felt like one of the major steps in my learning. And the result? No more wanging around the sky. Well, in comms this week, seems like the whole world's been in touch with us. On Twitter, we've had a hello from Kevin Barrett, who says he's enjoying the podcast. He says he's an on and off again glider student on a serious mission to complete his license at Skyline Soaring. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's a gliding club out near Washington in the United States, and very close to where I took a little day trip earlier this year and rented a car and went to drive up the famous Skyline Drive in the Shenandoah National Park. So just off to the side of that is Skyline Soaring. Lovely looking place. And if those ridges are worth flying on, some of them are quite spectacular. So hello, Kevin. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Great to have you on board. I also heard from Nathan Deutsch, a.k.a. Most Disabled Pilot. I saw Nathan on a great video on YouTube. It's called Nathan, Why Walk When You Can Fly? And it's about his story to learn to fly. Nathan, look forward to seeing you in the gliding world sometime. He says that somebody's trying to persuade him to fly at Lasham. And I think you're going to really enjoy it when you do. So when you do, don't forget to drop us a line or record us some audio, even better. I'd like to say hello as well to Justin Case, whose Twitter ID is @SoaringGlider. And Justin is also one of the people behind the Gliding Bible Facebook page, which I was really pleased to find recently. Put a link to that in the show notes.
G'day, Sam. My name is Patrick. I'm a glider pilot and I live in Adelaide in South Australia. It's been an absolute pleasure listening to your podcast and how you're learning to fly. I wish you every success and I can relate to everything that you've been saying. I've been gliding now for about 4 years. And I was a power pilot before that and still am, and came across to gliding from powered. And I feel that gliding's really improved my powered flying, so just an interesting note there. Sam, I admire your aspirations and I admire your perseverance and determination. It sounds like you guys have absolutely awful weather compared to the luxurious gliding weather that we have here in South Australia, where we can pretty well fly all year round in excellent thermals. I'm a member of a winch club and also an aero tow club, and I also fly motor gliders. So if you're ever in Adelaide in South Australia, Sam, please look me up. I'd be delighted to go flying with you. And I'm sure that you've got a few things that you can teach me as well. Safe skies, strong thermals and tailwinds, my friend. All the best, and I wish you every success in your gliding career. Bye for now.
Patrick, thank you for the invite for a trip down under. Like I said in my email, please don't tempt me. One more winter like that, and I'll be packing my bag and seeing you down there in sunny Oz. And a very warm welcome also to Peter Julia. Peter says, Sam, I discovered your podcast only a week ago and I listened to the first 7 episodes so far. As I listen to your podcast while driving to work, I feel as though I'm in the glider with you and I hear the takeoff, launch, the sound of the rushing air and the landing. I'm from Denver, Colorado, currently working on my sport pilot license. After 37 hours, I've had to put it on hold for a while because learning to fly powered aircraft is extremely expensive, almost $200 an hour. Even after I get my license, it will still cost me around $120 an hour. I am at the point similar to what you went through in episode 4, asking myself if I should continue, and is it all worth it? Now, I'm seriously considering switching to a glider because it may be a more fun and less expensive way to fly. Peter, thanks for listening, and thank you too for reminding me how powerful and fantastic the art of podcasting is. And also this week, there were some comments on the UK glider website. I'd like to say thank you to Mark Courtney for the offer of some motor gliding with him at North Hill. And thank you also Jordan Bridge, member of Lasham and also co-founder of Facebook's The Gliding Bible, for an invitation to aero tow with you at Lasham. It's good to have those options and I'll definitely be looking into these in the next couple of months. So it's time to perform a hangar landing and pack show number 10 into the hangar with all the other shows. The Glider Show is aimed at people learning to glide anywhere in the world, as our emails this week demonstrate. I hope that you accept my invitation to be part of the show. As our correspondent in Australia proved, it just takes a minute or so to record an audio and send it in. There are plenty of simple ways you can do it. The best is to record and send me a short audio clip to ukglider@hotmail.com. If you've got a smartphone or a PC, then you're a couple of clicks away from taking part in the show. All you need is a voice memo app on your iPhone or any kind of recording software on your laptop or PC. Don't forget, you can also tweet me at UKGlider. You can check the Take Part page on the website, and that's the first time I've read that without making a mistake, at ukglider.com for more information on how to take part in the Glider Show. Music for the show is Cloud 9, provided by Norwegian slide guitarist Finn, as always. Don't forget that if you click the Subscribe to the Glider Show in iTunes button on the website, you'll get new episodes automatically delivered to your PC, Mac or smartphone. You've been listening to The Glider Show. I'm Sam Deeks and I look forward to hearing from you. But until next time, fly safe.